So did you win any money? Did you win any money?
Did you win any money? Oh, Jane did. I didn't. She always does.
Sure.
Uh-oh.
Good evening, everyone. It is 6 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, September 19th, 2024. I would like to call the Ponsonlet Town Council to order. I would ask everyone to please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record show that all council members are present in council chambers. Please remember to complete the citizen participation request form if you wish to speak and provide it to our town clerk. And that is to speak during our citizen participation portion of the evening. With that in mind, let us begin with the items on our agenda. Item 4, additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda. Are there any? Mike?
Yeah, Steph has some. There's under 6A, the baby Ponce was not able to be here for the certificate today, so we're going to have a different presentation by Becky Hoogler, our public information officer, on the results of an informal social media survey that she recently did. Also, staff is proposing to move item 11C, that's the new fire apparatus, up to 8A, and that's items preferred at the beginning.
Thank you, Mike. Are there any other additions, corrections, or deletions to the agenda? Seeing none, I move to adopt the agenda as modified on the record.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted as modified. We are now up to citizen participation. The town of Ponsonlet encourages engagement by its citizens, and we do that by a variety of means. This is an opportunity for our citizens to talk to us collectively on any subject that is not identified on the agenda. You have 5 minutes. Please come up to the podium, place your name and address on the record, and we will try to answer your question. However, if it is more appropriate to be on an agenda at a later time, we will advise. And if it's something that would be more beneficial for us to research so that your answers that you receive are accurate, we will let you know that as well. Now, if an item is on the agenda, you will have the chance to come and speak after the item is presented and council speaks. And again, like in citizen participation, you will have 5 minutes to do so. So our first individual for citizen participation is Bonnie Carney.
Good evening. Bonnie Carney, 86 Rains Court. The Town Charter Section 3.04 states, nothing in the foregoing is to be construed to prohibit individual members of the council from closely scrutinizing by questions and personal observations all aspects of the town government operations to obtain independent information to assist the members of the formulation of sound policies to be considered by council. It is the express intent of this charter, however, that recommendations for improvement in the town government operations by individual council members be made to and through the town manager so that the manager may coordinate efforts of all town departments to achieve the greatest possible savings through the most efficient and sound means available. Now, each member of council took an oath of office to uphold the town charter. And before you go reminding any citizen here about how long these meetings have been going on for or asking how many meetings we've attended, you remember that you all have been here for each meeting. You have been here since this process started, and we elected you for this job. All of you asked for this job, some of you multiple times, and all of you receive payment from the taxpayers for this responsibility. Yet there are numerous categories that will be presented here tonight where you choose to do little more then attend your meetings and let other people tell you how they think things should be. With little exception, mostly from Mr. White, you offered no such recommendations, provided no such scrutiny, sought no independent information, and proposed no alternatives. There are people involved in this town who like to spend the taxpayers' money. They paint a picture for you of dire needs and must-haves, and then they present you with Cadillac solutions. You comply and offer them the citizen's purse. These same people are asking you for more, and you seemingly feel duty-bound to grant them their wishes. But your duty, first and foremost, is to the taxpayers. And while public safety is an obvious concern and an obligation, indulging these appetites, with the premium items they request, while other needs go unmet, is not your obligation. You've already signed a very lousy vehicle lease program, including expensive, gas-hungry SUVs and trucks chosen by Chief Scales and Chief Glazier that will cost the taxpayers an enormous amount of money and necessarily redirect funds from elsewhere. It's not clear that the council or the administration staff asked any critical questions about this lease. It's not clear if anyone even read the lease, except my husband. But here we are again, hands out, must-haves laid out, and the purse is open. You're ready to fund nearly every item, service, and contingency brought to you by either citizen or staff without having done your due diligence. The police boat was only removed after citizens asked obvious but important questions that you were too unconcerned or too affected to ask. You are obligated by the town charter to closely scrutinize and to proactively obtain independent information and to strive for the greatest savings and efficiency. Do your job. Do it tonight. You have the chance to make up for the apathy and the lack of proper oversight that we've seen so far. Show that you can and will uphold your oath of office by voting against the proposed budget here and reforming it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Carney. John Carney.
Thank you, Mayor. John Carney, 86 Rains Court. I wanted to talk about conflicts of interest a little bit tonight, and I know the town takes those things very seriously, and I've been on your side of the microphone getting training on conflicts of interest, and I've also read, you know, the town's guidance on that, and I've always been taught that the conflict of interest policy is that you don't do anything that would even create the appearance of a conflict of interest, and so you just try to stay out of that fray completely. But your employee rules and regulations lay out pages of guidance on conflicts of interest, which are helpful, and the one that concerns me most is item number 1.04, part F, and it says, no town employee shall perform its official duties in such a way as to secure a special privilege, benefit, or exemption for the employee or others. And I think that some of the duties that you've got assigned in the town right now, there are some issues with conflicts of interest. And the first one is Chief Scales having responsibility for vehicle acquisition and then acquiring vehicles for himself to use, not only for work, but he takes that expedition home. And so he gets personal benefit from that. And so his public job has benefited him personally. And the big concern there, Police Chief Glazier spoke last week about the need for new police vehicles, but those two expeditions that got bought, by the time the town pays for the lease and also pays off the residual at the end, if we end up buying those vehicles out to keep using them, they're going to be $78,000 apiece. That's $156,000 for two vehicles. And I have to think that for $156,000 or $52,000 a vehicle, we could have gotten three nice vehicles, and there could be another police officer in a brand new vehicle right now with the exact same expenditure, not spending a dime more. And so I would like to see, you know, some reform in how the town does acquisition, and possibly I would suggest having someone trained to do acquisition and have that responsibility and really be, you know, the source of some due diligence there, and just somebody that's going to enforce the rules, because we really shouldn't be doing sole sourcing. We shouldn't be doing piggybacking as first choices. We ought to be doing full and open competition as a first choice, and things like hey, we're behind on the schedule because we didn't plan far enough ahead, that's not justification to piggyback. That's the justification for you're going to have to wait because you're going to have to go through the process as it's laid out. And so we need really discipline in this process. And I think there's a lot of area for improvement if you look at it. And one of the other concerns that I have, Chief Glazer also mentioned, you know, that they've had real experience with transmission issues and other things with the Ford Explorers, and he really doesn't want to buy another batch of Ford Explorers and go through that again. But if you read the purchasing code, if the town goes out for competition on those vehicles, right now the only method that's in there for purchasing is low-cost responsive bidder. So whoever comes in with the low bid, if that happens to be a Ford Explorer, the way it's written, that's what you're going to get. And I would really suggest that you look at some best value types of contracting to go in there. So then you can put things in there like life cycle cost or fuel economy or other things that aren't going to show up in that bid, but yet then the purchasing official can use those and say, well, wait a minute, you know, we don't want to pick the cheapest because that's not going to give us the best value for the taxpayer overall, and it's going to cause other issues. And so it just allows you to have some flexibility to use, you know, excellent input like, hey, we know the transmissions aren't going to last on those things in this duty. But you can't do that with your code the way it's written right now. I mean, it's just, it's not in there. And so best practice or best value contracting is commonly used. It's not strange. It's not odd. It does stand up to protests, and it's a valuable way. It's not, you don't have to do everything that way, but there are times when that's the way that you really want to do your acquisition. And the other conflict of interest, which I think is inherent in the town manager and council government form, is that the town manager ends up having to bring you his proposed compensation every year. And you all know that, but there's inherent conflict there, and there's no way to restructure anything out of that conflict, but it's just something that you have to be aware of, that there's risk there and that this town council is responsible for managing that risk, you know. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Shannon White.
Shannon White, 39 Coastal Oaks Circle. I would like to thank Mike and his team. We were able to meet a couple days ago, and it was very helpful to understand some of the processes or procedures that were dealt with. But we Ponce Inlet, are a very small and unique community with limited growth opportunities. We need to utilize our collective experience, history, and data to better understand and project our future. We need to analyze actual use, needs, and wants. Our vehicle fleet should last longer due to low mileage, the actual use, and the less stress that we put on them due to the environment we're in. I oppose the purchase of the golf cart.
Oh, if I may, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we will be discussing the golf cart as part of the budget agenda item, and you'll be able to speak then to the golf cart. Is there anything else that perhaps you would like to share with us at this time?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
I understand that we have two bicycles for the police department. How often are they used? The only time I've seen them used is during a special event, and that was on July 4th. And there's, you know, rumor or whatever you want to call it of the thought of getting e-bikes. Well, if we're not using regular bikes, why would we need e-bikes? And again, we need to look at the actual use and the purpose of this. And what is the status of our citizen patrol car? I see it sitting most of the time. And how often is it used? And who's managing that? And what is the objective of that citizen patrol? You know, we talked about $9,000 for electrical box wraps. And that's only an issue because others have it. You know, I'm sure somebody was presented with it because, you know, we drive by and we see it in Daytona Beach Shores or elsewhere, and we haven't had it for ever, for years, although they've been painted green forever. Is it a need? No, it's not a need. I know a lot of items may be viewed as not very impactful to our budget, but they all add up, and it becomes real money when you say $20,000 for this, $9,000 for this, $3,000 for this. You know, it becomes real money over time. And every year, we're faced with this. So as my point was before, we have a compounding issue here of present value to future value. And if we keep spending without the growth that we're restricted because of our land mass, and we have no abilities such as Port Orange or some of the other towns surrounding us, we are not like all these other towns around us. We can't study them and then compare them to ourselves. We're totally unique with a lot of the restrictions, land restriction that we have. So we need to understand that, again, the change in our community of homesteaded residents to non-homesteaded residents, as that percentage has shifted, the concern I have about that available funds being, that trajectory being capped or becoming more and more concerning as we go on. So again, I just really want you to understand my concern is that all these little items add up and can be very, very impactful to a small community such as ours. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Steve Field.
Steve Field, 6 Marsville. First of all, I wanted to thank Mr. Disher, Chief Scales, and the Financial Department for meeting with Shannon and I the other day. We learned a lot, and we really appreciate it. And I certainly have a better understanding of the source of funds for the reserves and what they can be used for. I also think that the staff learned some things. So I think it was a mutually beneficial meeting that we had. So once again, thank you. I don't want to talk about the current budget. Plenty of people will talk about that. I just have some suggestions for the future budget planning. I would like to suggest the following.
If I may, would you mind those remarks during the budget?
They don't impact this year's budget.
Okay. Go ahead.
But it's for something for you to think about next year.
All right.
And the future years.
Okay, Mr. Field.
I'd like to make the following suggestions. The council should set budget targets by department. Department heads being responsible for making the decisions to fit their needs into the target budget. Instead of the budgets being a bottoms-up approach where the council has to vote out individual items. If you set targets, then they have to make the decisions. The department heads have to make the decisions what they can afford and what makes sense. But if you don't set a target, I believe that they put more things in the budget than are really necessary. I'd like to suggest that we form a budget committee made up of a council member, the budget head, financial representative, and members of the community. This committee could help in the budgeting process and meet on a quarterly basis to review actual spending versus budget. It's not clear to me that you do that today, but I think it's important. People need to be held accountable. And the last thing is the land acquisition fund. It is my understanding that a simple vote by the council can change how the reserve funds be utilized. Since the first year cost for the new fire truck is covered out of existing fire truck reserves, will you consider changing the ordinance that created the Land Acquisition Fund to include major capital expenditures instead of using general funds to cover loan payments, for example, the fire truck. That's just something for future years. That's not for this current year budget, because it's not necessary.
Mr. Fields, if I can interrupt, I think that's an excellent idea. I know that I've spoken with Mike about that earlier. It's Ordinance 2003-05, and with the town hall being paid off soon, what I was going to ask during comments, and I can ask right now, if I can have a consensus of council to direct the staff to look into that for us, your idea, okay, because you're right. We want to relieve the demand on general revenue. So do I have a consensus of council to have the staff look into?
Yes.
Could we have some members of the community be a part of that process?
Initially, the staff, I can't even comment on that. Initially, the staff has to do their research, and based upon what the staff says is we can take it from there. It would be premature for me to comment on that.
I think Mike has already looked at that.
Yep, started to, yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Excellent. Was that it? Anything further? Thank you, Mr. Field. We appreciate it. Is there anybody else in the public who wishes to speak? Yes, sir.
Steve Miller, 383 Walnut Street, Daytona Beach, Florida. And I just want to come tonight to introduce myself to you guys. I'm a candidate for District 2 County Council, and it's a pleasure to be here. And Mr. Dasher and my dear friend Joe V, sorry I don't know the rest of you guys, but I got a chance to read about you. I got a chance to read about your history, and I know some of your concerns, and some of your concerns are also my concerns. I just want to let you know that I'm not a monster, and that I'm a Republican and been a Republican approximately 10 years in. And so just want to let you know that I'm here, and if I'm elected, I'm looking forward and working with you guys. Of course, you all have a very interesting city. I got to Volusia County in 1980, and one of the first places I wanted to come is to see that lighthouse. And I realized that house lighthouse was donated to you guys in 1972, and the reason I know that is because that's when I finished high school. But and by the way, again, the name is Steve Miller. Like, and I like to think some of you guys have heard the name Steve Miller. Like, fly like an eagle, take the money and run. And I used to work for Internal Revenue Service, so and I used to introduce myself. I'm gonna take the money and run. And my spouse told me, do not tell them that you're a joker, you're a toker, you're a midnight smoker. So. I think I just did that. But again, my name is Steve Miller. I'm a candidate for District 2 County Council, and it's truly a pleasure to be here with you guys tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Is there anybody else who would like to come up and speak at this time? Oh, yes, Mr. Suster.
Suster, 4650 Links Village Drive. Last meeting, we had a wonderful presentation when Representative King gave you guys a check. It was very nice, and everybody was up here. And a couple weeks ago, you gave Harbor Village $22,000, and there was three emails sent out beforehand to have everybody show up to get that money. Once you gave them the money, Harbor Village is not, nobody in Harbor Village knows that the money's been awarded to them. So you might want to call them and tell them to say that, because there's nobody that knows the money is there. And when people give money, they all say thank you. There's nothing. I personally don't think you'll never see that money again. We also learned that nobody ever walked on the boardwalk to see how it looked and just gave the money away. So, just something to think about.
Is there anyone else in the audience, any member of the public who wishes to come up and speak? And thank you, Mr. Suster. Is there anyone? Okay. Seeing none, then what we will do now is close citizen participation. Agenda item 6. And 6A, we have, yes, please, Becky.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I am the PIO for the town. And I just want to take a moment to highlight something really special that's happening in our community. Our residents have been sharing some incredible positive posts on social media about life here in Punta Inlet. So I wanted to come and share those with you. Yesterday, I posted, "We want to hear from you, Ponce Inlet. What's your favorite thing about living in our beautiful town? Is it the beautiful beach, the stunning sunrises, our close-knit community, or something else that makes Ponce Inlet special to you? Tell us in the comments below." And I just want to read a few because they're pretty neat, and I think Stephanie's going to put them up so y'all can see how many likes just some of them got. But I'm going to start with Jennifer. She said, "It is all of that and more. Yes, the first responders that keep us safe, the elected officials who are keeping Ponce Inlet interests forefront, the restaurants that are great to the locals, the Marine Science Center in our backyard, the beautiful and historic lighthouse, the new Pacetti Museum, the jetty, the dog park, lighthouse ice cream shop, great pickleball courts and parks and community events. So much to be grateful for." Melanie said, "I'm an early morning runner, and I love when I see the police patrolling." Beth said, "The community is the best, supportive, kind, and friendly." Linda said, "Mostly, I enjoy the peaceful atmosphere, love our police keeping us safe, and knowing there's a close fire EMS response team. The beach, sunsets, and friendly people are an added bonus." This is probably my favorite one. This is Lisa. She says, "I love that our little town doesn't even have one traffic light. I love the beach and the riverfront. I love that we are self-sufficient, our own PD and FD and town council. I love the MSC. I love our pickleball courts." We know she does. "I love our beautiful lighthouse, and I love our residents." Brittany says, "Safety. Our officers and firemen are the best and so kind." Clint says, "Definitely the feeling of safety with our officers." Elizabeth says, "I love the small town atmosphere, friendly folks, and deep history." Shh, let's keep it that way. Couple more. Kathy says, "It's such a peaceful, quiet, and calm community. Enjoy listening to the sounds of the ocean, the smell of the salt air. Love looking up in the daytime at the cloud formations, the pelicans flying in formation, back to earth, the wildlife all around. At night, the moon, the stars, the rocket launches. It is gorgeous. What a privilege." Laura says, "I like how safe our town is. There's virtually no crime. Your kids can play outside without having to worry about them. I like that we have our own police and fire department. They are a bunch of great guys. And lastly, we love how safe and clean Ponce is. We love being able to ride our bikes, the beach, or to one of the local restaurants. The local police, fire, and beach rescue are awesome. They are many friendly and wonderful people who live here as well." So I just want to thank all the residents that responded from the staff. It's part of what makes Ponce Inlet so special. And these posts are special to me because I just randomly come up with stuff, and it strengthens our sense of community, spreads positivity, and showcases what makes Ponce Inlet such a wonderful place to live. And I just thought you guys would want to hear about it.
Hey, Becky, thank you so much for bringing this evening to us. It's absolutely wonderful to hear. Thank you. Now we are at 6B, which is our proclamation declaring October 23 to the 31st as Red Ribbon Week supporting the Volusia Young Marines. Okay, bear with me for one moment. I will read the proclamation, and in our audience, we have our young Marines along with their unit commander, Sarah Zettelmeyer. I believe that you're here. Yes, good. Once I read the proclamation, I will ask Unit Commander Zettelmeyer and the young Marines to please join us. And if they wish to say a few words, we would welcome that. And then our council will join all of us for a photograph as we present the proclamation. Proclamation of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Florida. Whereas communities across America have been plagued by the numerous problems associated with illicit drug use and those that traffic in them, and whereas there is hope in winning the war on drugs, and that hope lies in education and drug demand reduction,
coupled with the hard work and determination of organizations such as the Young Marines and the Marine Corps League to foster a healthy, drug-free lifestyle. And whereas governments and community leaders know that citizen support is one of the most effective tools in the effort to reduce the use of illicit drugs in our communities. And whereas the red ribbon has been chosen as a symbol of commemorating the work of Henri Kiki Camarena, a Drug Enforcement Administration agent who was murdered in the line of duty and represents the belief that one person can make a difference. And whereas the Red Ribbon Campaign was established by Congress in 1988 to encourage a drug-free lifestyle and involvement in drug prevention and reduction efforts. And whereas October 23rd through the 31st has been designated National Red Ribbon Week, which encourages Americans to wear a red ribbon to show their support for a drug-free environment. And now, therefore, I, Lois Peritsky, Mayor of the Town of Ponce Inlet, do hereby proclaim October 23rd to the 31st, 2024 as Red Ribbon Week in the Town of Ponce Inlet, and urge all citizens to join me in this special observance. In witness whereof, I hereunto set my hand and cause the seal of the Town of Ponce Inlet to be affixed this 19th day of September, 2024. Thank you. Unit Commander Zettelmeyer and Young Marines, will you please join us up front? And if you wish to say a few words, we would like that. And now, our next agenda item, we have with us today the President and CEO of the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber of Commerce, Barbara Ann Hegan, to speak with us. As you all may know, the Town of Ponce Inlet, along with a number of our businesses, are members of this chamber. So, Ms. Hegan, the floor is yours.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members, Town Manager and Town Attorney. I am Barbara Ann Hegan, President and CEO of the Port Orange South Daytona Chamber. We have headquarters located in Port Orange, and we have an office here in Daytona Beach Shores. And we are proud to be champions of your beautiful town of Ponce Inlet, sending visitors that come to our area every day to visit all of your beautiful amenities. We'd like to share other ways that we partner with your town. We are going going to host a power networking luncheon hosted by Seacoast Bank on October 8th from 11:30 to 1 in your Ponce Inlet Community Center. We represent 677 businesses, and on average at our power networking luncheons, we get about 80 to 100 attendees. We invite all of the council members to attend if that is of interest of yours. It is an economic forecast called Wall Street to Main Street, and the presenter will be the Executive Vice President, Michael Young. In addition, we run a leadership program for 10 weeks, and that leadership program has been a staple of our chamber. We bring leaders from all different industries, small businesses, to some of our government entities. They send a representative that's an emerging leader, and in that 10 weeks, they are learning all about our wonderful cities and towns and how we operate, showing the best skills as leaders. And we are proud to have Mayor Prinsky present, as well as your town manager, on Government Day. And we will also have a Public Safety Day, and your wonderful police chief has also agreed to present. So we're very grateful to your leadership. So we look forward to your participation in these upcoming events, and just know that we are grateful for our partnership with your town. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And our last item under six, we have three proclamations, each of which can be viewed at the Town Hall kiosk. The first proclamation is in conjunction with the celebration of National Community Planning Month. I'm presenting a proclamation declaring October 2024 as Community Planning Month. And in recognition of the role played by municipal government in our daily lives, I will present a proclamation declaring the week of October 21st to the 27th as Florida City Government Week, and to encourage residents to learn more about the native plants in our community, I am presenting a proclamation declaring October 2024 as Florida Native Plant Month. So, that... That's Barbara, our lead native plant resident. Thank you, Barbara. Okay, we are up to item seven, which is our consent agenda. We have three items on the consent agenda. Does anyone wish to pull an item for further discussion? Does anyone in the audience wish to pull an item for further discussion? Seeing none, I move to approve the consent agenda as presented. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. Now we are up to item eight. This is the old 11C. This is old new business items preferred at the beginning of the meeting. This is an item. It is dealing with the purchase of the 75-foot Quint fire apparatus. There are multiple votes in this agenda item, but interrelated, so we will be discussing all parts, all three parts together. One, the purchase. Secondly, the funding proposal. And the third, to approve the resolution. I will now ask our attorney to read by title only Resolution 2024, and when he has completed that, Mike will come back to us to begin our discussion, and after Chief Scale's presentation, we will begin our discussion on the purchase funding and what to do with our current fire truck if we are to buy the new fire truck. So, Cliff?
Yes, ma'am. This is Resolution 2024-19, read by title only. A resolution of the Town of Ponce Inlet, Volusia County, Florida, authorizing the execution and delivery of a lease purchase agreement with TD Equipment Financing, Inc. with respect to the acquisition, financing, leasing, and purchase of a 75-foot Quint fire apparatus, authorizing the execution and delivery of documents required in connection therewith, authorizing all other actions necessary to the consummation of the transactions contemplated by this resolution, providing for severability, and providing for an effective date.
Thank you. Mike.
Yep. Chief Scales will present this item.
Okay, thank you. Now, As Chief Scales is approaching, I want to say that the purchase of this new firefighting apparatus represents a major capital expenditure for this community if we choose to do so, and a significant investment in our safety and security. I know that many of our long-term residents have come to know Fire Chief Dan Scales for his decades of service to our town and also as the longest-serving fire chief in all of Volusia County. For the benefit of those who may be new to our community, as well as those who are not as well acquainted with Chief Scales, I would like to take a moment or two to provide a brief overview of his long career and extensive experience and expertise in this subject matter by asking Chief Scales a few questions. Chief, how long have you served? Well, first, please put your name on the record for us.
Dan Scales, Fire Chief, Public Safety Director of Ponce Inlet.
Thank you, Chief. How long have you served in your role as our Ponce Inlet's Fire Chief?
Since 2005.
And what are the duties of our town's Fire Chief?
Well, obviously, it's to oversee all the operations, administration, daily duties, planning, and just about everything with the fire department. And, you know, what I'd like to tell folks is I'm not in charge of anything, but I'm responsible for everything. And everything that our folks do every day, this is not hyperbole or you know, tooting our own horn. What we do here is very serious every day. My guys just responded 10 minutes ago to a drowning in the Shores. That's the stuff that we deal with every day. And I'm responsible to make sure that our men and women are equipped, trained, and ready to do those jobs. That's my responsibility as fire chief.
Thank you, Chief. And how many staff members does the town have within the fire department?
15 firefighters, deputy chief, myself, and an office manager.
And prior to serving as our fire chief, where did you work and what roles in public safety?
Prior to fire chief, I was the operations captain here in Ponce Inlet, firefighter. Prior to that, I ran the EMS program at Daytona Beach Community College when it was at DBCC back then. Prior to that, I was a paramedic with Evac Ambulance, and I worked in Daytona Beach. Prior to that, I came from up north like most people did. I was a paramedic with an ambulance-based hospital system, or hospital-based ambulance system in Pennsylvania and in the fire service in Pennsylvania, and I started in the fire service in 1983.
And how many years of total experience do you have in public safety?
We started in 83, so it's been a while.
Do you possess any certifications in public safety?
Besides my Florida fire certification and paramedic, I'm also a Florida State Certified Fire Officer 4, which is the highest level of fire officer certification in Florida, Fire Instructor 3, which means I can teach any fire subject that's in the curriculum for the fire college, and Life Safety Inspector, which means I can inspect fire alarm systems, sprinkler system, things along those lines.
Now, do you hold any designations in public safety?
I'm credentialed through the Center for Public Safety Excellence as Chief Fire Officer.
And what is that?
It is a credentialing program that CPSE does. It's similar to accreditation, where there's a set of standards that you have to demonstrate that you meet, and there's a myriad of things that you have to present to this accrediting body to be evaluated, and evaluators from all around the country basically look at your credentials, and you go through this process, and you're awarded it, and it's renewed every 3 years.
Do you belong to any associations, Chief?
Currently, I'm part of the Volusia County Fire Chiefs Association. I'm a past president of that association. I've worked on numerous subcommittees with them, EMS subcommittees, operations subcommittees, pretty much every major operation, policy, procedure, thing that we do in Volusia County, not just Ponce Inlet, I've been a part of, I've been involved in.
Now, do you currently sit on any public safety boards?
I do. I'm on the EMS Fire Advisory Board for Daytona State College.
And have you been the recipient of any awards in public safety?
I was a finalist for the Florida League of Cities Employee of the Year and Volusia League Cities Employee of the Year.
Okay. Now, As Ponsonlitz Fire Chief and Public Safety Officer, are you responsible for the well-being and safety of our residents and visitors?
I am.
And you're responsible for the safety and well-being of the brave men and women in the fire department?
I am.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that, Chief. If you would just, yes. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone. We're very fortunate to have you, Chief.
Well, and if I could just say, in all seriousness, I'm retired or retiring from my role here in the near future, hopefully not too distant future, but we'll see. I've been with this community since 2001, and I've seen this community grow from a small, sleepy little community, which I wish it still was, to what it is today, and it's a destination. It is a tourist destination. It's a place that people want to live. And what I would like to tell you all that may not know this is that I and my family owe all of you a huge debt of gratitude for what you've given me and my family over the years. Everything that I do here is not for my benefit. It's for you, the community that I love, all of you. Every day, I come to work. I can't wait to come to work. I can't wait to serve this community. I'm proud to be from this community. I'm proud to be for this community. And I thank all of you for giving me that honor. If it ends tomorrow or 10 years from now, I thank all of you. And what I do here, I do with all seriousness. And I understand some folks' trepidation and concerns with how things happen and how things are done. I can assure you it is with the utmost integrity that we do what we do here. I welcome discussions. I welcome criticisms. We can always do things better, and that's what we want to do here. That's always been my role. As fire chief or employee, I am here for all of you, all of you, and I always will be. And I thank all of you for what you've done for me and my family. What I've done for you is the least that I can do. So with that, thank you for indulging me.
Thank you, Chief.
Okay, back to business. What I have here this evening is I wanted to take this opportunity of a few slides I wanted to go through to talk about this purchase of this Quinn apparatus that has been the subject of a lot of discussion over the past few months, many months. Just to kind of give you a little bit of a background, what we currently have at the fire department now is a fire engine, which is a picture of that particular vehicle. It's a 2009. It's about 15 years old. Talking about the acquisition of an aerial apparatus really started in 2008, believe it or not, when we first started talking about replacing this or buying this apparatus. We debated back then on whether to buy, at that time, a telesquirt, which is very similar to a Quint. The decision at that time was made not to do that because at that time, Port Orange, South Daytona, Daytona Beach Shores, and the city of Daytona Beach all had aerial apparatuses in service. So they were within close proximity, and we didn't feel that the need was appropriate at that time. Since then, the Shores and South Daytona no longer have an aerial apparatus. Port Orange and Daytona Beach do. And those cities rely on those other cities to provide that service. So we don't have access to those aerials. So the situation changed a little bit since then. The vehicle is about 15 years old. And as the slide says, the typical recommended replacement schedule for a fire apparatus is between 10 and 15 years. There's an NFPA standard that says that. It's not a requirement. It's a suggestion. It's an industry standard. They don't look at mileage necessarily. Every vehicle is unique in the environment that it works. Our vehicle is unique. It doesn't have a lot of miles on it. But because we do a lot of short duration runs, it's a diesel, it's a severe duty vehicle, those short runs are as detrimental to its use as long runs are. In fact, if it were running up and down the road longer, it would be better for that vehicle. But in addition to that, we live on the ocean, and I don't know if you guys have noticed that things just don't last here. Things that just sit here deteriorate over time. So all of these factors play into, you know, the consideration of replacing this vehicle. I want to be very clear. This vehicle has a lot of service life left in it. It is not in danger of exploding on the apron. It's still in good shape. It still has time left on it. It still has a lot to give. But we're getting to the point now where it's starting to be an expensive vehicle to repair, and not just the cost itself, but every time we have to repair this vehicle, it's out of service. And when it's out of service, I'm relying on another city to provide a backup truck so that we continue to provide service. And that's becoming a challenge, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So this process really started, this specific process really started at the beginning of this fiscal year in October. We knew we were coming up on this point to replace this vehicle. We started looking at different options, a traditional fire truck or a Quint. And in January, we presented, let me back up. In January of 2024, we presented options to the Essential Services Advisory Board. We started that process with them. We suggested the acquisition of an engine or an aerial and justified either one of those, and basically let ESAB think about that until we met with the group in March to talk about our budget discussions. So in March of 2024 is when the discussions really occurred. And we had a pretty good discussion as far as buying a pumper or a Quint apparatus. And the decision at that time, we were looking at a $1.5 million vehicle based on a 2 to 3 year projected build. And the decision at that time was to proceed with a Quint aerial apparatus. There was no specific model. There was no specifications provided to ESAB at that time. That's what we do. We decide what version that we're going to purchase based on our needs. ESAB supported the request, and we told them at that time it was also going to be a lease purchase option as far as financing was concerned. Let me just back up real quick, just so you folks know, this is our fleet. This is currently what we have in the fire department. The top picture is the truck that we're talking about now. That's a 2009 E1. The one below that is actually a 2001 Pierce mini pumper. That truck is going to be surplus. The pump is failed. It no longer has a mission, and it's not worth investing any maintenance in, and we don't have a use for it. And additionally, it's a manual transmission. Nobody can drive it. It's a real challenge driving. So it's going to be auctioned or sold to get the best price that we can get for it, and that's going to come off our inventory as far as the maintenance obligation. So that's going to be gone. The next vehicle is our primary ambulance. That's about 3 years old. And the one below that is our reserve ambulance. So if our main ambulance goes down, we have a backup that we can swap into quickly. And once we get the second power stretcher, we can actually put two ambulances in service if we need to, which would be a big advantage. So moving on, as I said before, the typical lifespan for these trucks is about 10 to 15 years. Obviously, if we were planning on a three-year build, this truck definitely has at least three more years in it, and it does. It absolutely does. Part of the discussion that occurred at ESAB was what to do with the current apparatus, and the suggestion was made that we keep this vehicle as a reserve piece, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. Talked about this. Now, there seems to be some concern, and I get it, that we started with an $80,000 down payment in a three-year build and all of a sudden jumped to, hey, we've got this truck, let's buy it next week, it's this much money. That is a rare occurrence, but not uncommon. And what happened was, while we were researching the build for this replacement Quint apparatus and preparing things for the budget documents, which is where we were started, in May, about May of 2024, one of the vendors that we've been dealing with had an apparatus that was in production that was not going to be purchased, and they let us know it was available. So it was definitely below the original price that we were looking at paying for that original vehicle at $1.5 million. So we started to take a look at it to see if this might be an option for the town that would save us a little bit of money and get a vehicle in service a little quicker. We didn't have to wait the 2 to 3 years. So that those discussions started at the June ESAB meeting. That was mentioned to ESAB that we may have an alternate option as far as the vehicle was concerned. We didn't give them a lot of specifics as far as the vehicle, but we did tell them there was an option available to us. And I believe once we started the budget process, and I remember, and Councilmember White, and I thank you so much for kind of putting me on the spot, because there was definitely some confusion on how we got to that point. And I think at the meeting on the 16th, we kind of vetted that, and we said this is how it came to be. So obviously, if you weren't, you know, didn't see how everything came together, it was a legitimate, basically an opportunity based dropped in our lap, and we had to take a look at it. So that's where we are right now. Now, I know there has been some discussion on the competitive bid or cooperative bid process, and this vehicle is being purchased through the Orange County Cooperative Bid Program. And what you need to understand about fire apparatus, all the manufacturers have at least one governmental bid from somebody, usually many agencies, counties, state governments, that you can piggyback. We can publish our own RFP for a vehicle. We will not get the price that we will get for Orange County because they're buying 10, we're buying one. And the specifications that we have in this particular vehicle, if I were to spec it tomorrow, it's almost identical to what we would spec. There's not that much difference between a Quint. Manufacturer has different features, different options, but the fundamentals are pretty much the same. So what we're doing here is not uncommon. Large cities piggyback. The work has already been done. The research has already been done. The pricing has already been secured. It's a standard, everyday process. It's nothing unusual, and it's to the advantage of the town. So what are we talking about? This is actually what we're talking about, and I know I've heard this for years, that ladder trucks are like fire chiefs' pet projects, that fire chiefs love to have ladder trucks. I could tell you nothing could be further from the truth. If I didn't think that we needed to do this, I would not be doing it. But we are at the point in time where this type of vehicle is definitely needed and definitely useful for this town. This is called a Quint. It's five functions. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Our screens went down.
Uh-oh.
Oh. Mine did not. Gary's didn't. Whose screens went down?
We're down. From here down with black.
Yeah.
All right. Brandy's coming up to check.
Well, while they're fixing, can I continue while they're fixing that? Do you mind? Okay.
You here.
So anyways, this vehicle has been around for a long, this type of vehicle has been around for many, many years. It basically combines the functions of a ladder truck with an engine. It carries all the hose that a traditional pumper carries, same water supply, same pump, same compartmental space. It's basically a big pumper with a ladder on top. And it carries additional ground ladders that we don't carry on your typical pumper because of the design. The vehicle that we're looking at has a 75-foot ladder, a 1,500-gallon-per-minute pump, and a 500-gallon tank. So this vehicle basically checks all the boxes that we need. It will serve this town very well, and we think it would be a great addition in providing service to the community. Are you guys back? Good. One of the reasons that we looked at this was our nearest aerial apparatus is either Botiford or City Center. Both of those, if you've driven them recently, they're about 18 to 20-minute duration. That's if they're in the station. If they're anyplace else, you know, it just adds additional time to that. If we need to place a ladder in service, by the time they get here, it's too late. Other vehicles have arrived. It's just not a practical application. In fact, the one fire that we had down at the south part of town of Beach Street, they raised the ladder, but it was so far from the structure, it really didn't do a lot of good because they got there too late. It took too long to get there. So that's one of the reasons that we're recommending.